Arthur, I'll be in here. Quiet now, I'm recording.
Hello, Tick here. You, my friend, well, if you're an evildoer, cover your ears, because you are listening to the Canned Air Podcast, which is nothing but keen spoon!
All right, Arthur, you can come out now.
And welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I'm Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Jake Runyon.
And joining us today, we have two comic creators here from the comic Metaphorical Hurley. Welcome writer James Maddox and artist David Stoll. Thanks so much for being here with us, gentlemen.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having us on.
We have a good show lined up for you today in our retro roundtable. It was this month in 1818 that Mary Shelley's Frankenstein was released.
Nice.
So I thought, let's do a tribute to movie monsters. Oh, yeah. Let's just talk movie monsters. I think we may have done this in the past, but we were leaning more toward the kaiju monster side.
That's true, yeah.
So this will give maybe a different take on something we've already done in the past. Then in the comic vault, what do we have, gentlemen?
I want to talk about Harry Bible Fellowship and a book the author recently released, Nicholas Gerwich, called Notes on a Case of Melancholia, that I absolutely love.
Interesting. All right, Jack?
And from our good friend Bob Sally over at Source Point Press, I have Ogre.
Okay.
Hell of a name.
Yep. Yeah, hell of a cover there, too. It looks pretty cool.
Yep.
Few of the books we'll be talking about there, and then we're going to turn our full attention over to James and David and talk about Metaphorical Her. But before we do that, Jake.
Here at the Canned Air Podcast, we're heavily reliant on our social networking presence to keep information flowing and ratings high. So do please do us a favor and yourselves by liking, retweeting, sharing, what have you, on all of our various social networking outlets. That's at Canned Air Pod on Twitter and Facebook, and at @canned_air on Instagram. Head on down, see what's new, what's happening, side projects such as our What If podcast that's really taken off. And if you really, really like what we do, head on down to Patreon, throw a little donation our way. It goes much further than you think. And if you can hit that $5 mark, you have access to the Founders Club Patreon exclusive podcast.
And in the way of What If, we just our last episode that just went up, what if fast food never existed, that was picked helped to be picked anyway by the listeners, by our Twitter followers. So
that one got heavier than expected.
It did. I did not expect that one to take the lead, but what an interesting episode that was, and I hope the listeners like it. I hope you guys like it. Go check it out, and keep an eye on our social media. We're going to be doing a lot more of that in the future, maybe even for Canned Air, to see, you know, give you
the power to control the episode.
But anyway, with all that behind us, let's just kick it off with this week's Retro Roundtable.
And here we go.
I'm going to say really quick off the bat, my picks here are kind of unconventional, okay. I guess. I mean, you probably wouldn't think of them as monsters. I'm looking more in the animation of life. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, okay.
Weird Science comes to mind. Make that be the very first thing. Being able to create your own bombshell beauty. Again, not a monster. And if it is considered a monster, it's a monster on my mind.
Kind of, yeah. In a sense.
I mean, it turns into a monster eventually, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. But she's pretty bombshell.
It's like, it's like a situational monster.
True. Yeah. Yeah.
Under the right circumstances. Monstrous.
Right.
I mean, gentlemen, in the end, the monster is always us.
True. That's like the go-to trope.
It's the truth.
We have been the monster inside the whole time.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You nailed it on the head with that. Yeah.
Anything zombie-related, vampires even.
What have we done?
Yeah. even like Godzilla is what? Metaphor for nuclear testing and weapons and stuff. We're still pretty much the monster.
We're to blame for that one.
Yeah. Let's make a monster movie where no one can say, what have I done?
it's nobody's problem.
I was thinking, just exists.
Oh, Cloverfield, but no, because there was that intricate bullshit alternate reality thing where some satellite from some corporation fell and disturbed the slumber of who cares.
I will say in this argument Pacific Rim does hold a leg because I mean they just there's a big hole in the ocean floor and that's where the fuckers come from, like it or lump it.
Thanks for streamlining that process, guys.
Yeah. Well, shoot, what is that Independence story. Day, we didn't have any.
That's true.
That's not
they
our
just kind of showed up.
Yeah,
that's and true. You know what, in that case, we even tried to negotiate, right? It's like, what about peace?
Sure. We were level-headed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think far more than we would be.
Shoot, Mars Attacks, even. We didn't do anything. We really tried.
It was a press conference.
Yeah, we tried.
We could have avoided making that fucking movie, period. Yeah. That was a shitty movie.
That's true. Yeah.
I
Some
wanted to see
floating
it.
A dove off and setting off the aliens.
Was it Sarah Jessica Parker's head on a chihuahua?
That was the worst part. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was what made that movie. That was what made that movie good. What are you guys talking about?
Both sides of the coin here on Candair.
Well, when it comes to movie monsters for me, obviously my number one pick is Dracula, but I've talked about shit like that so much. I want to sidestep the whole thing. Everyone knows I love Dracula. Let's move forward. I saw a movie recently that sucked, and it was called Life. So, if that's not telling, I don't know what is. But
Life, okay.
Yeah, it's got Jake Gyllenhaal, Ryan Reynolds.
Okay.
A number of other fairly big names. They're in this space station, which is struck by some piece of debris.
Yes.
And they find this microbial life form. And I remember it started out kind of strong, because they were talking about this entity. They said every cell is simultaneously a nerve cell, a muscle cell, and a photoreceptor cell. And I'm like, oh, that's wild. That's life outside of what we know here on Earth. That's something completely alien. Mm-hmm. What an interesting concept. It's this thing that is so efficient and contained, every part of itself is capable of locomotion and sensation and thought process. And like, that's cool. They're off to a great start. By the end of the movie, it gets bigger and stronger and just becomes this flying squid thing with a big mean face. And I'm like, what happened to the bit where every cell did everything? Why does it need arms, you know, if every cell is a muscle cell? Why does it need eyes if every cell is a photoreceptor cell?
Yeah.
They just kind of threw their own rules out the window and made this generic, shitty alien monster. Mm. And I was bummed.
I wondered what happened to that film, because I remember seeing trailers and being like, oh, I've got to see that shit. And then it
like a
5-minute
trailer of the in the little lab thing, and it grabs the guy's arm.
That
and
was
that's really all you ever saw.
That was
but
the
you're
best
saying
the
it turned
got.
Into a hot mess.
It did. It just really, really fell apart. But early on, when they were just trying to figure out what the deal was, when they made all these inferences about how it worked, when it touched the guy's finger, all of that was fantastic.
Mm.
Everything after that, totally forgettable.
This sounds like the experience I had when we were doing the What If episode, like what if shrinking technology existed, and I went running after that Matt Damon film, Downsizing, because I wanted to see it forever.
Sure.
And it was dog shit, man.
It's a shame. I was curious about that one. Really curious.
It's such a good idea, and just... Anyway.
So that's my pick for, like, movie monster that started out so interesting and then just became the next alien kill beast.
Sure.
Yeah, no, because it kind of runs up against that monster runs up against the barrier of the media that it's in, right? So like you have a monster that's supposed to be you know, every cell is a muscle cell or whatever, and then you're in the development room and you say, okay, well, it grows bigger. Now what does that monster look like? And if every cell of that monster is optimized, that monster looks like a blob.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, like you can't have a cool monster based off of that. So like it's like a really cool high concept. You're like, oh my God, yeah, like the most efficient monster ever. And then like in reality, if you follow that to its logical conclusion, it would be like, well, that's kind of lame. So like it makes sense to me that they went with like a weird flying spaghetti monster kind of thing, but I also haven't seen the movie, so I don't know how shit it came out.
I feel like they could have made it work to an extent. They could have given it a somewhat definite form rather than just making it like totally amorphous, which I would have preferred. Whatever. Call
well,
me
they
the
already answer. Did that movie a couple of times.
Yeah, exactly.
Back in the 80s and then earlier.
But I don't know. It was just so generic. And it's a shame because, you know, you think like whose fault is it? Where does the blame lie?
And yeah, that is it.
the person who conceptualized this monster, the people who brought it to life, the animators, like, no, these are probably all people working hundreds of miles apart, desperately trying to make this thing happen. It just didn't come together right.
But you wonder how something so shitty like that, that is perceived on such a big scale as shitty, can get through that many levels of quality check to being in a fucking theater, you know?
It's got to be like the sunk cost fallacy, right? It's like, all right, we've sunk so much into this. The projector's going to hit the screen. I don't give a good goddamn what it looks like.
Like the Mario Brothers movie. Like, how do you not? Like, a month or two before you're supposed to release it. No, we got to pull the plug on this shit. This is going to hurt us.
So they're doing screen tests.
Now, listen,
for
if we're talking
fans.
About favorite movie monsters, then the Goombas are probably, like, my favorite movie monster.
Oh,
those things are awesome.
That took an unexpected turn, but I like it.
You know, I got to say, when I was younger.
Don't at Dave.
No, you can't. I mean, it's fine. I'll fight. I'll throw down about this.
It's really weird because, like, they're... I don't know. Talking about how does it get so bad? I have no experience in that industry at all, but I imagine that the more people that get involved with, you know what we should do this, you know, like adding in additional thoughts, and then you feel like you have to listen to that person's thoughts. Like, I don't know. I've done a few collaborations where it goes off the rails really quick, and if you don't rein it in, like, it can get kind of trippy, which can be cool. Don't get me wrong. It can be cool to get trippy, but
artistic licensing going awry.
Right, but sometimes it can get super vanilla and destroy, you know, a really good concept.
Sure. And you have to totally see that. Yeah.
You have to think, too, that every movie is somebody's first. Whether you're in the front of the camera, behind it, whatever you're doing to make that movie, if it's your first, you have a level of enthusiasm because, like they were just saying, eager to make it in the field, you want to do the best you can and do it as quick as you can, no matter if it's a dog shit film.
And, you know, I've got to wonder how many people who are working on a movie get a clear view of the whole picture, you know?
Oh, that's true.
Maybe through the narrow lens of what it is they have to do on a day-to-day basis, they're like, well, shit, this is really cool. Like the guy who was building the space station sets was probably thinking, oh, this is perfect. The layout is great. Everything's within reach. Oh, I've done my research. This is going to be a great spaceship interior. And then I don't remember the interior layout of the station. Maybe it was the best representation of an actual functional space station that's ever been in movies. It was just overshadowed by the fact that the monster ended up being not so great. And it's a shame because, you know, like you were saying, you get an interesting idea or like a unique one. And the more people you bring into the process, the more homogenized it's going to be. And not like it's going to be bad, but you bring in a wide range of views, opinions, and tastes, you're going to get something that's diluted to the point that everyone's kind of okay with it.
And you raise a hell of a great point there to insinuate that, you know, some of the creators may never fully kind of grasp the actual vision. I mean, imagine, let's say, Hogwarts from Harry Potter. You know, to be just a designer, a creator, whatever your title would be, and to be saying, okay, we need a school that's also this old castle. You know, that could be anything. Yeah. And how many times they would have had to gone through that to actually get what, you know, Rowling had in her mind there, and to have it come out as, you know, I'm no like big Harry Potter fan, but damn, if that castle was freaking gorgeous, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Come it was on. Iconic.
It was amazing.
They knocked it out of the park. And, you know, it can go really right and it can go really wrong.
But that's just a great example of where they get inside the creator's head and they know versus Super Mario Bros.
You know, it's
where
like
they just drink.
What, the blind men and the elephant, right? Everyone's seeing a different part and saying, like, hey, this is good. This is what it's like. And then it comes together and you're like, what a shame.
Yeah.
That's exactly true. And even to like a larger degree too, like even like animation teams, like the team that animated that flying monster thing, like there were probably texture artists that had no idea about like the main thing that they were doing. Oh, they just knew that they had to make this thing look, you know, bubbly or whatever. And I guarantee that there was like at least half of that team that went to see that movie and went, wait, what the fuck? Like that was
what a feeling that must be. Just horrible. Yeah.
Who was the guy? We had somebody on the show who had worked on Stranger Things. He did the...
Yeah.
I cannot remember his name off the top of my head.
He did the digital, the graphic, the
graphic overlay on the filming of Stranger Things. But I think he had said the same thing. He goes, you know, we get these notes and make this sink look dirty and like it's a like a gas station bathroom. And he doesn't understand why or what it's going to be used for until
they
see.
He has a job to do.
Yeah. Very good point.
Yeah, the only thing that they've been working on is this patch of like moldy, rough looking skin, and then in the end they're like, "Oh my god, I was texturing the Demogorgon's head. Holy shit!" And then
it's true.
Well, that's the thing. Like every single tiny aspect of pictures and movies and TV shows requires this laser beam focus and this whole team of specialists who can do this and this and this. Like you're not going to hire one guy who can animate and he's also the screenwriter and he directs now and then. Like, no, you want people who are known for those particular things. Yeah. And so
for sure.
You just kind of, you become a drop in the ocean, right?
Yeah.
Or if that's the best texture artist in the world, like, oh, tell you what, the skin just under the thing's third northwestern flap, quality, you know, it's just
yeah.
I also like the movie monsters that are just absolutely cheap and look it, you know.
See, those like, are the best.
Like just somebody.
Those
like,
are the best.
What's this? What was that old movie? This Planet Earth, I think it was. It had the great big round eye, exposed brain aliens with the claws that were obviously just two dot guys.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Like their arms and these extensions.
Those are wonderful though, because you see those and like you take them at face value.
Yeah.
You don't stop and think what
this
kind
islander,
of environment.
Excuse me.
Ah, there you go. Yeah.
This islander.
See the zippers called on the back of the suit.
Yeah.
And stuff.
You're just like, yeah, that's an alien robot.
I mean, and that's why I think like you can go back to those universal, you know, like the Creature from the Black Lagoon kind of awesome monsters, and still, you know, geek out on them because they're more than just, you know, let's make a fancy looking thing. They were putting out an idea that that transcended whether or not it looked good. It was just, it was good. It was from the heart. I don't know. I'm sentimental.
No, I get it. I mean, there's more to it than just a monster wreaking havoc. Like Frankenstein, you know, all he wanted was a friend, and in doing so, accidentally kills this little girl. And
he's doing his best. Does he have a soul? You know, is it right to have created him?
Right. And not only does it become a relatable thing, but it also, you know, spawns, I think of the Hunchback of Notre Dame. I mean, I don't think he killed anybody, but a very misunderstood character.
It's like
what I mean?
Different and sad and lonely. And,
well, I'm like, how did you feel about the Babadook?
Oh, yeah.
Like the visual of that. The visual of that was really cool, but the idea behind like the presentation of that monster and what it meant in that storyline, like that's why it stands out. That's why people talked about it so much because, you know, for all accounts and purposes, it wasn't like a major blockbuster or anything like that. But what it was smart. And what it was you know, cool.
I've caught a lot of flack for like suggesting that movie to friends and then be like, thanks, that was shit and my night was ruined. And like, I can't even be mad at them because I like to think, this is going to sound snobbish, I don't know, but like it's for a very specific audience, right? Like I assume you watched it and you kind of felt something. You're like, oh shit, I've been there. You know, it brings these sort of emotional and psychological conflicts in front, you know, it's this, oh, it's this big metaphor for depression or anxiety or loneliness or what have you. And in that context, it really works. As a movie monster, he's not much more than a cloak, a top hat, and like some stock pterodactyl screams.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's that kind of storyline, like that more reaches out to me than like it's Silent Hill versus Resident Evil. I would much rather sit down with Silent Hill than I would, you know, a big sci-fi shooter romp like Resident Evil. And I know that, you know, that's just an opinion, man. You know,
well, it's an opinion I agree with.
It's a well received opinion. Yeah, for sure. I have one here that I want to ask you guys if it qualifies. Darth Vader.
Oh, interesting.
Ooh. I could see him. Yeah.
And, you know, obviously, again, a tragic character, deformed, cut from, you know.
Misunderstood. I guess not really misunderstood as much, but.
Now, I don't know if you guys have been keeping up or listening to comic news at all when it comes to Star Wars. But, you know, as last time I checked in, and as far as I still know, as far as the main run goes, it's still being done by Jason Aaron. And if anyone has read anything he's done, it's fucking awesome, no matter what it is. But there have been many Splinter series off the main run, too. And to my knowledge, I mean, I'm positive the main run's canon, but to my knowledge, it's all canon.
Yeah.
Okay.
And one thing that was just either in one of the most recent comics or something to come out in the Darth Vader, I think it's the Darth Vader book, it's alluded to, if not just blatantly put out there, that Palpatine, Sidious, is the one who placed the child in Shmi Skywalker. Like, this was his vision from the beginning.
Wow.
I think I caught some kind of
Did you read it? Did you see something on that?
No, there was a picture of Hayden Christensen, and it said something about Darth Vader. I don't remember what it said exactly, but
I think I saw what you're talking about, and I don't think that had anything. That was just a meme or something, but I wasn't sure how to feel about that. I don't know if James and David are Star Wars fans necessarily.
I feel like that gets a little bit lazy, and that might not be a good. That might not be like the best hot take, but it's kind of like you guys all saw Episode 8, right?
Yeah. I'm assuming. Unfortunately.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. We can argue about that later. But anyway, the moment at which like it was revealed that Rey's lineage is nothing.
Yeah.
Right. Like that was my favorite fucking thing because everybody was like, oh, is she an Obi-Wan? Is she a Skywalker? You know, and like tying it all together like that just makes the universe so much smaller. Right. So like making Palpatine. Yeah. Making Palpatine have like put Anakin in Shmi, like just kind of ties everything together in a really neat bow. And I know a lot of people who really like that kind of like simple storytelling, like this leads to that and this was always that, but like having it be a random event makes it so much more powerful. So like, I don't know. I'm not about that.
I agree. We don't need the answer to every single lingering question and something that, especially, I think you said it perfectly when you said it seems kind of lazy, I guess.
Taking the easy way out instead of trying to make it magical.
Yeah. Right, and well, it feels like right now, you know, to pull something like that, it's kind of like what can we do that will like ping off of, you know, all of the fans like nostalgia, so that everybody's like, oh, it was Sidious the whole time, but it's easy enough to retcon that doesn't have any influence over the actual universe, you know, and it's just kind of like.
You know, I always just enjoyed the thought that we will never fully understand what this force is and that just in its wonder and however it works somehow it's made that happen.
Where, like, even the people most connected to it don't fully
understand. It was a happening. The circumstances were right for this to happen. Will we ever understand them? No. But I feel like since Disney has had Star Wars, they're very eager to not only explain the force, but give it new and more powers, make it more complicated than it needs to be.
It's like,
it's the why children. Why?
Yeah.
Because of this. You said tie it up with a neat little bow. And, like, I totally get that. Like, imagine the last time, hopefully not recently, but, like, you caught a person in a lie and they've got a story where every detail is so perfectly organized. And it's like, oh, they spent a long time piecing this together. When was real life ever so streamlined and logical?
Right.
Yeah. You know, everything just kind of happens.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, we went down a rabbit hole there, didn't we?
Welcome to the life and movie making episode.
A little bit. So I want to go back to whether or not Darth Vader is a
monster.
A monster, right? So obviously he's done some bad things. You know, he's made some mistakes. Our buddy Vader, and so what qualifies as a movie monster to you guys?
Well, the only reason I have him on this list, he wouldn't be on this list if it wasn't for that thing I just read. Like I said at the top, the thing they just did in the comic with Palpatine putting Anakin in Shmi. At the top of this episode, I was saying my categories were kind of off because I'm looking more in the realm of the animation of life, and now have it with it a possible thing that Palpatine animated,
you know,
Anakin into, you know what I mean?
It's life. Funny that you should say that, because earlier on when you were talking about Frankenstein, I was going to say, like, oh, we can make the argument any creature born outside the natural cycle is a monster, right? It's like, well, sure, there you go. I guess by that definition, but I almost think his redemption has something to do with it. Toward the end, you know, taking off the helmet, looking into Luke's eyes.
Oh, it's between an antagonist and a monster, I think, is where I wanted to go with that.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I would have typically put him in that category if not for that thing I had just read, which was
so and I get that, like you know, he was artificially created, so he was like, he was kind of put into the world instead of like just coming in naturally. But like I think that I would call Vader a monster, because I think that after all the stuff that's happened to him and all the choices that he's made, I think that he gets to be the movie monster, right? Because when he walks onto the scene, everybody's like, "Oh shit, it's Vader!"
Yeah, the general stress thing. You monster!
Think about how they in episode 3, when he came off of the table after being first put into the suit.
Yeah.
It was a corny scene, but at the same time, they really did capitalize that
restraints.
Frankenstein's monster coming to life. And you know what I mean? Like, kind of wobbly first steps. I don't know.
No, I totally...
and that's exactly it, is that like Vader was like made to be the monster that he was, right? Like his whole arc was about not having choice and about like being manipulated into what he is. So I would put forward that like to be a monster would be to kind of be forced into your position a little bit.
I was just about to say like that's what it is, right? The difference between an antagonist and a monster, like an antagonist's decisions have evil consequences. A monster's nature makes it evil to the outside world looking in. You know, it's a thing outside of place. And what's Darth Vader except this powerful, troubled, supremely driven person who's been dealt all these tragedies and turned in all these directions, and he's just moving forward. He's just in constant motion, and there are all these players around him that are moving him this way and that. He's just the monster. He's raging and doing this and fighting. And from the outside, we're like, oh, look at all these atrocities. But from inside his own head, it's probably more like, boy, I'd love to just go home and take a nap right now. But I've got to destroy this rebellion and do this and that. And the Emperor wants this.
I don't think naps exist in Star Wars.
Probably. No. Soak in my back to take in my underwear and my diaper.
Go for a nice skin scrubbing now.
Yeah. Do we have any other monsters to mention here, gentlemen, before we move on?
Well, after that whole defining a monster, totally kind of took all the stuff that I had out of there. Because they're mostly just monster in the sense of...
Well, again, it was very loose.
Yeah.
It was very loose.
Yeah, and just because sure. I didn't mean to, like, narrow that down on you.
No.
Well, Jack, all my stuff's shit now.
Just go wait.
I actually have one that might, like, break that mold again as I set it up and then break it immediately. So James was talking about, you know, like, monsters that were obviously very, very poorly made. How about the... what are they called? It's like the Killer Clowns from Outer Space or something like that.
Oh, my God.
Right? Those things are terrifying, and I would definitely call them screen monsters, but also, they weren't created by anybody else, and, like, as far as we can tell, their motivations are pretty evil. They're both the antagonists, and I would argue the monsters of the movie.
Mm-hmm. There's got to be an exception to prove the rule, right?
Yeah. Well, one I had on my list here I wasn't going to mention, but since that made me want to mention it, Finster from the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. You guys remember Finster?
He would make the monsters.
He's the one who made the monsters. He'd just make them out of clay and run them through this machine, and they'd come out the other end full grown and alive.
I want that machine.
Oh, yeah.
He made some of the dumbest shit, man, like I've ever seen. Like, it's a stoplight for a head? Like, what the fuck?
I got
lobster
an idea.
Claws. And...
make a thing with an atomic bomb for a heart, and every one of its limbs ends in a gun.
So little thought was put into this, these monsters. And some of them were kind of okay, but one was like, okay, it's a pig's head. Put a fucking Spartan helmet on him and give him arms and legs on the head, and we'll call that a monster. I mean...
Like, no, dude.
Nah. And why did they only ever make one at a time? He could have made an army of these fuckers and killed them the first time.
Remold the putties and you had a whole army.
It's just product testing, man. You know? He's going to find one that sticks.
What works.
We'll see how this one works.
Maybe this one will go for the gold. All right.
They're having board meetings on their next monster.
Well, we increased fight time by about 30 seconds. Perceived rate of injuries went up.
We need to focus more on defense this next time.
Offensive tech is nice, but when you don't have the longevity.
Okay.
May I add one more?
We're going to have to let you go. It's not as good as they were 5 years ago. I'm just going to say it, okay?
Go ahead, Jake.
I'm going to throw in one more monster that has nothing to do with our previous conversations, just because the idea of it scares me so much. You touched on it, the blob.
Mm-hmm.
You see all sorts of scenes where people are being dissolved alive by this blob.
Yeah.
The thought of that is the most horrific thing I can even imagine, of like having every inch of your surface.
The thing of nature, right?
Yeah, and just... Ugh.
I've never seen the blob. Was this a fast-moving thing, or was it...
No. Well, it could want to be. Not like chasing you. Yeah, it would just kind of snatch you. Kind of
mostly it, like, snuck up on people, I think. You wouldn't be in an open street, like, hey, run, it's the blob! Like, it would be in a cupboard, and then you're fucked because you didn't check the cupboard.
But then the more it ate, it grew bigger and bigger, so...
I remember as a kid being into Goosebumps, R.L. Stine Goosebump books, and they did a take on the blob. It was called Monster Blood.
Yeah.
And they had three parts to that book. I was at the store... All three of them. I love those series. And it's funny because I recently was at my dad's bringing some old stuff home, and I found one of those books in there and read it. My God.
They have not aged.
No, they have not.
Letters are really big in the book.
Oh, yeah. They've become more of pamphlets than books now, you know? But anyway.
The interesting thing about some monsters, and I'll just kind of... you know, wrap my head around this one. Okay, so think about monsters like Freddy, you know, that have to, like, do the jump scares and surprise their victims, right? And then think about stuff like the Blob, or hell, even the monster from the Ring series, right? They didn't necessarily have to, like, jump up and scare you. All they had to do was... look at you, and like she didn't do jump cuts, she didn't do any of that stuff. It wasn't like a jump scare type of horror. It was a I'm coming for you, and there's literally nothing you can do. Same thing with the Ju-on, you know, like it's that kind of horror that is self-confident, you know.
You get that pursuit monster that's just like, I'm gonna get there.
That is a good point that, you know, I didn't even think about,
and I won't worry about whether I'm scaring you. Like, I don't have any skin in this game. You're just gonna die, and that's all there is to
it.
So
I don't watch a whole lot of horror, only because I feel like the bar I set for what I like and accept is far too high.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed far too often. But the first time I ever see a horror movie deliver a jump scare, I'm almost instantly out. I'm just like, oh, okay, that's what this is going to be.
Yeah. I get pissed. They got me.
They're like, ooh.
You son of a bitch.
You did it. It cost you millions of dollars.
It's not even that. It's just like, really? Like, I thought this was going to be a higher caliber horror film.
But that's what keeps me coming back to horror, is when I do find that film.
That's true.
That makes it work and makes me be like, huh, that was excellent. Like, I've seen way more bad horror films than I have good ones, for sure. But the ones that, you know, surprise me, that's what keeps me coming back.
I'm going to have to look more into that now that we've kind of talked about this and I have it in my awareness. I'd like to find more horror films that are like that, because I can't think of any off the top of my head. Because I know I enjoyed The Ring when I saw that.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
Mm-hmm.
So I never saw the sequels. Were they any good?
Not so much, no.
No? I still want to see that the newest Blair Witch on Jake's testimony alone here.
It had some interesting elements.
Yeah, it sounded pretty good.
Some stuff that really got to me in weird ways. They did some interesting things, but I tell you what, I am such a... Like, when I go to the movies, I'm so set on having a good time that my defenses are down. Like, afterwards, I'll be like, ooh, that was garbage. When I'm in the process of watching a movie, I'm so excited to be watching a movie that I... almost always think it's good.
That's how I am.
Yeah.
So I'll watch it later and be like, wow, that was bad.
Yeah. I thought this was good.
After I saw it and talking to Adam Swart, I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, it was cool. But if I watch it again, I might be like,
Episode 8 did that to me.
Oh. Anyway, let's not open that fucking box because we're going to end up talking for another 40 minutes on it. We got to move on. And before we do, gentlemen, Adult Swim has sent another package our way. Yes.
Easy Pete.
Another package here. It's a black box with a screaming, wailing man on the front.
What in God's name are we looking at?
Who is that?
Well, let's find out together, shall we? You know, typically when you open these boxes and look at the fun things that Adult Swim sends, you can be like, oh, That's a Jack prize. Or, oh, Jake, he's going to want that. Yeah. This isn't one of those gifts, you know. I don't know what to do with this.
Is this a Jeremy gift?
No. Oh, right. Jeremy isn't the dump bin for the shitty ones. We have a purple fanny pack.
That we do.
From a new show premiering on Adult Swim called Tink Tone. Not only a purple fanny pack, but it's got a nice
loin pelt on it.
Yeah. Oh, that's what it is. It's more of a loin, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
But it looks like something to do with this guy and this alien friend. I haven't seen a trailer or anything for it yet, so I really know little about it, but I think I'm going to be having to set the DVR.
What's the tagline on there?
From the creators of Tink Tone comes Tink Tone.
Sure.
So it obviously has the Adult Swim humor element we all know and love. If you take a look at the back of this thing, it's Jake, maybe you could get a picture of that and throw that up on Twitter.
Yeah, maybe someone can make sense of this because I am lost.
But
I'd be lying if I said I wasn't interested.
It's definitely intriguing. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Get pictures of the whole thing and put it up on Instagram. Well, it's funny you say that, because I was wondering if people not only would be interested in having this gift, but maybe we would autograph it for them. You think they'd give a shit? Probably not, but...
Nah. It'd sure make us feel good.
Why would they care about a purple fanny pack to begin with?
Autograph the card that it's tied to.
Well, that's what I meant, not the fucking fanny pack. Sign in the purple hair, Jack. January 13th, it premieres on Adult Swim. It doesn't have a time, but typically these things premiere at midnight.
Yeah.
So that's where I would be checking on your DVRs. And go to adultswim.com. I'm sure there are trailers there, if not on YouTube. Tink Tone, T-I-G-T-O-N-E. And I want to thank Adult Swim, as always, for sending another very entertaining package our way. We never tire them. Love them, and we have to figure out what we're going to do with this thing.
Yeah, some hanging up on the wall.
I'm going to wear it more.
One of the local rock music station DJs calls those a bro bag.
I'm sure
he's trying too hard. His way of making it cool so he can wear it to work.
I think so. Yeah.
Like, no, dude, it's cool. Yeah. It's a bro bag.
All the bros wear.
North Face makes it, right? All right, now we are running a bit long here today at 40 minutes, so let's cut the comic vault down just to a few. First of which I want to mention here, a person who's been on the show several times, Jerome Walford. I don't know if he's been on since you've even been with us.
Not that I can recall.
He was for his anthology that he did.
Was he?
Yeah.
Okay.
You might not have been here that day.
He was a regular on the show in like the early days, and... man, what good artwork and good just writing comes from the projects he's associated with. And this is the next installment of Nowhere Man. I can't remember the exact number. I forgot to write it down, what is being released. I think it's like volume 3, I think, is what's just come out.
That sounds right, yeah.
But for those of you who aren't aware of what Nowhere Man is, it's about Jack McGuire, a cop by the name of Jack McGuire, who lost his father in 9/11. He was one of the first responders that went in before the towers went down. And he's just kind of spends his life trying to, you know, honor his father's memory and his name and being the best cop he can be. Well, then he comes into these future like special operatives who have come back with a special technology that they give him and gives him special powers and allow him to kind of fight off these future entities that are coming back to cause havoc.
Well, doesn't he branch back and forth between a guy that's from the future, Zaid?
I can't remember exactly. It's been a long time ago. We started this show in 2013.
I know.
Remember that. And then this was toward the beginning. Yeah. So it's been a little while. But, you know, getting back into that comic, I read most of it, and getting back into it was like putting on a comfortable pair of old shoes or something, you know what I mean? Yeah. It was cool to dig back in and get a taste of the story. We see Jack now getting a grasp of his powers, finding that certain gestures he makes with his hands and his arms make certain things happen, like energy orbs around him or a shield, or if he holds his hand out like he's typing, kind of like a, you know how Falcon has a talon that shoots out his back?
Yeah, yeah.
A very similar kind of a talon kind of a thing that comes out and he can control. And taking on another entity who has the same kind of technology as he does, but much more advanced. I mean, that's...
Of course.
Right. But the artwork is fantastic. I can't stress it enough. I think of it now mentioning that villain, because their fight scene, The artwork looks better than typical stuff you get from DC and Marvel, I think.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Yeah. It's so good, so colorful, just so well done. And another thing I really enjoyed about the comic, I don't want to give too much away. Again, it's an indie comic, but later in the issue, Jack's, like I said, a cop, but he's wanted by the cops. They think he's murdered somebody, which he hasn't done. He's a fugitive. And one of the cops, his love interest, I take it, knows he's innocent. And so the word of the street is, we're looking for a guy wearing this blue beanie toboggan with the 2 zeros on the front. It was kind of his insignia. Mm-hmm. You remember that?
Yep.
So she goes downtown and gets like boxes of these hats made and just goes on rooftops throwing them out. So everybody nice. Has them, you know. But it was just it's a great comic. I strongly recommend looking into it. Nowhere Man from Forward Comics. That's comics with an X. ForwardComics.com. And, yeah, check it out.
Awesome. Was there a lot of more schematics?
I didn't see any schematics, no.
Oh, that's
no.
One of the best parts of that book.
Well, I think they probably did a good job of explaining most of it in the beginning. Well, I don't think his technology has really changed a lot. He's just got a better grasp of what it can do now.
That's true.
And there's a lot going on with telepathic links between people that I don't quite understand yet. But, again, it's been a long fucking time.
Yeah.
All right, maybe we got time for one more comic entry here, gentlemen. Anyone?
You know what? I'd like to make a quick shout out via Twitter. So I'm going to give Jack the floor here to talk about his comic.
So I've got in the talking about monsters, Ogre. It's about an ogre.
Oh, appropriate.
Yeah. it takes place in a land that's riddled with war. There's a north and a south that's always been fighting. And it opens up on a castle and into the dungeon. It kind of gives a brief of what's going on, what army is actually attacking the castle. It gives a little bit of detail and story on there. But there's a bunch of prisoners, of course, in the dungeon. And they're talking about the goings-on with the war and what's going to happen. And there's this ogre just sitting there in the corner, just minding his own business. And they hear him talk to someone every once in a while, and they keep yelling at him, quit talking to that thing. Well, come to find out that he's got shackled to him is a dead guy. And he talks to the dead guy, which is a ghost that hangs around him.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So he's dragging the Weekend at Bernie's corpse while he's seeing his ghost in front of him?
Yeah, he carries him around, just taking care of him. They end up breaking out of the prison. The ghost is wants to teach him how to fight with a sword. The ogre would rather fight with a big club because it's easier, but you get better results with a sword.
More mileage,
sure.
But he would pretty much, it's kind of like ogre, how he'd rather just be on his own, left his own devices on his with his life. But he's got to kind of decide what he's going to do now that he's out free. Not so much with the body, I guess he kind of likes having the body with him.
Mm-hmm.
But it was pretty good. It's all done in watercolor. Bob Sally wrote it. Sean Daly did the art. And if you look at the artwork, it looks like it's watercolor paper.
You can see the texture.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Really yeah, nice. It really does.
So I don't know if that was just like on the computer, you can make the canvas look like watercolor and then paint on it, or if it's actually scanned images.
Well, I mean, they have kind of like if you had like a Apple Pencil, for example, with an iPad and certain program where you can mimic the effect of watercolor. I mean, you're still actually doing the painting and stuff, but just with don't you have one of those things at home? Like a electronic pen pad that hooks into your computer that you can. So, I mean, it's technically it's still them doing the artwork. It's just not actual. But who knows? Maybe it was. This is gorgeous.
Yeah. And there's 3 issues. They're just now, I think, taking orders for the trade. If you go to Source Point Press, you're not going to get any of these issues. They're all sold out. So you're probably best maybe looking at your local comic shop or getting digital on Comixology.
Very nice indeed. It's from Bob Sally. It's going to be good, right? Yep. All right. Well, with that behind us, let's turn our attention over to James and David and talk about another webcomic, Metaphorical Her, which has just been an absolute pleasure. James, David, I want to thank you guys again for being here with us today, and I'm excited to hear more about this comic.
Yeah, hey, absolutely. Thanks for having us on.
Give the listeners like an overview of what Metaphorical Her is.
Metaphorical Her is a story about ambition and poetry and the rock scene. And it takes all that and kind of is encompassed by this storytelling, I don't want to say gimmick, but that's kind of the word I've been using. Gimmick in which we use visual metaphors to help tell the story, because it's a slice of life story. And I've always wanted to tell a slice of life story. Like it's been on my bucket list for the longest time. But for me, like I'm a horror writer. I've done a lot of sci-fi, like I've done a lot of genre work, and I needed something that would keep me and presumably Dave and presumably the audience or the readers interested in, like, excited to see what was going to be shown next. And to do that, we decided to go with this method of using visual metaphors to help the story along. Because in poetry and prose, you can tell, you know, you can use metaphors all the time. Mm-hmm. But in comics, if you use metaphors, it gets kind of murky and might confuse the readership. So that was both a worry when we started doing that, but at the same time, I was just like, screw it. We're going to see if this plays. And so far it's been a lot of fun and the readers seem to like it a lot.
It's in my notes right here. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I was just going to add on a little bit that, at its heart, Metaphorical Her is a lot about like community and family and building up kind of support systems. And we have a whole bunch of like really, real feeling characters who kind of screw up on a daily basis and who hasn't been there. And it's kind of all about like leaning on the people that you love. And in order to spice it up, all of our visual metaphors are set so that they kind of like shock you out of the like everyday real life situations that we're kind of setting up. For instance, like it's not exactly a spoiler because it happens in panel 3. Our main character commits career suicide by blowing her brains out in front of some very affluent people. And
it's an amazing and picture too. Yeah, just
looking at it. Awesome.
Yeah, and then she continues on as if she was actually fine. And we had a bunch of readers be like, oh, so does she have like healing powers or something? Like, is that what we're doing? And that's not what we're doing. Our metaphors are real in the sense that they're visual, but they're not actually like influential on the actual world. So it's been a pretty fun kind of project.
I tell you what, it was that scene right there that really hooked my interest when I started reading into chapter one, because I was like, oh my God, what the fuck? What's she doing? Oh my God, she's killing herself. Oh wait, you know. And then for that to sink in, you know, she's still sitting there telling them off with half of her face missing. I love that. And then a little bit later in the story, you see her tell someone who obviously cares about her that you're nothing more than me than just like a one night stand or something. And as he's sitting there, he just kind of takes his hand to his chest and
I'm sitting there looking at that,
pierces
too.
His own chest and rips his own heart out and hands it to her. And while the conversation never breaks, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I had to go over each of those metaphors twice. Just to kind of, you know, one, hear the conversation, and two, take grasp of the metaphor itself. Yeah. It was just a great experience. And let me also commend you guys on taking the best advantage of your medium. One thing I love with web comics is when they take advantage of where they're at. Either have, you know, some kind of flickering light, maybe, say, in a panel. But the way you guys, your comic scrolls from top to bottom, and, you know, the action, your dialogue, whatever it may be, for the most part, stays pretty centric. It makes for such an easy, enjoyable reading experience.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That was actually a pretty interesting thing to get used to, I guess, because both James and I come from print comics. Yeah, so you know there are different kind of story beats that you play with when you're doing an infinite vertical canvas, and there are different things that you can play with. But like, whereas you know a regular comic page, you kind of have like one story beat per page, and you end it on kind of a cliffhanger so that they want to keep turning the pages. In vertical format, you don't really get that opportunity. So instead, there's a whole bunch of really cool opportunities, like that shot where the heart is bouncing down the stairs, and you kind of have to scroll to keep following it. And we do some really cool stuff later on. Like there's a shot where like I pan down this field, and it like flips upside down so that you can see the other end. And that's all been like super fun to figure out how to play with exactly. And how to pace your story out.
And it's been fun to see, like, I have a good idea on how I want things to be presented while I'm writing the script, because I've had to adapt script writing to a vertical format. But it's even, I don't know, it's even more exciting to see what Dave turns over. Like there was a scene where I was basically emulating, you know, you ever read Family Circus and how Billy just bounces and goes all over the place in no linear fashion whatsoever. I was basically having one of our characters go through and do a bunch of errands in the city, and I didn't know exactly how we were gonna do that. But Dave did this like really nice, just basically you're a drone going over the cityscape, over top the cityscape, and you know, you see the trails and like pop out panels showing what's happening inside certain buildings, and it was just a lot of fun, you know. And to know that we can throw out the, you know, are we going to make this a print comic, because screw that, we're going to make it a vertical format comic, and the presentation of it, that's what's going to be the allure, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not like we're trying to play both sides of the field, because you know, that's one of the more asked questions from a lot of the readers is this going to be available in print?
It was my next question.
Yeah, my answer is that's not in my head right now. Now, what I'm doing is writing for Webtoons format, because that's where our readership is, and that's who's going to react the most to the story. So I want to, you know, give them everything we got, basically.
You're taking down your boundaries, and I respect that. You know, that's how the Beatles kind of did with Sergeant Pepper. They were sick of playing live. They wanted to do something that couldn't be replicated live. Of course, nowadays it can, but at the time it couldn't, and they didn't worry about writing in a fashion that would suit a medium. They just wrote to the best of their ability, and that's how you get the best work. I'm sorry, Jack, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I don't think this would work in print, just the way...
It would have to be reworked in some, I would imagine, in some areas. It would have to be reworked
in a way that would kind of...
In scroll form, I think, it would have to be done.
We have talked about that. Actually, everybody who we talked this with, we wind up bringing up the scroll idea.
Yeah.
And you could load it into the front of a player piano and just watch it right in front of you.
My first...
go for it, James.
Okay, so my first Webtoon experience, a mutual friend... of Dave and I, we worked on a short story for a horror anthology that Webtoon put together. And I was going to Emerald City Con last year, and was just so amped to have this story done. It was really, really good. Dave actually did the letters for it. Thank you, Dave. But I wanted to print it out in a scroll form, so I actually like went through and saw like what would the document be if I printed this thing out, and it ended up being like 4 inches wide by 77 feet tall.
Good Lord.
So I quickly nixed that idea.
Wow.
I could just imagine like standing in one of the aisles and just like unfurling this long scroll that reached from wall to wall, you know.
It sounds like one of those old like stock market ticker tape kind of things. Was constantly running, you know?
And it's like standing in the middle of a big ball of the comic.
Sorry, this is kind of unrelated, but who did you say was the name of the friend that you...
Morgan Beam.
No kidding, I went to middle school with him.
It's her.
Oh, all right. Well, I knew a Morgan Beam in middle school.
Different Morgan Beam.
Well,
only one.
We have a best of episode clip here.
Well, please tell her I'm sorry for the confusion. And if it makes her feel better, the Morgan Beam I knew was a very good person, so she should not feel better.
She was a very good person as well.
she's in good company.
Cool. I'm glad I interrupted you for that. That was really worth it.
Me too, Jake. Me too.
So when it comes back to, like, you know, doing what we're doing, I'm really happy that more and more, because when we first hit, there were a lot of people that, like, I don't want to say that didn't get it, you know, because that sounds like really uppity, and I don't.
They just don't get it.
Yeah, it's like that. But a lot of people were just like, "What the hell is going on here?" And it's making me happier that we've gone through. We found, you know, a really good audience for this, and the more that we do it, like, the more people are trying to explain to others, like, what specifically is, you know, no creator wants their work to be just kind of left on the side of the road. So
sure.
More and more, as more people, like, we just had a big Q&A reach out where, like, people sent us emails on, you know, questions they had on the series or questions on process and things like that. And we got a lot of emails in, and it was really cool to think and to understand that we're doing something that, you know, people are digging.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think that,
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I think that part of the deal, it's not so much that, like, people weren't quite getting it at the beginning. It's that, like, we're not the general Webtoon fair, right? Like, a lot of Webtoon audiences go for comics that they expect, like romances and things like that, which Metaphorical Her is put under simply for kind of lack of a better tag to put it under. But then here we hit the reading market with, like, hey, here's a girl blew her head off, and that's not the craziest thing we're about to do. But and so a lot of people were like, oh, this is not what we were expecting, this is weird. And we kept getting comments about, like, I still this comic, but I'm still reading it. And now people are still reading it, and we have our audience, and I think it's really cool.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a medium where you get to be yourself too. Yeah, some of the most impactful comics I've ever read have been web comics. What was that one, Jake? Maybe you can help me. Was it something Rex about the superhero and the villain?
Yeah.
Where at the very beginning, the villain succeeds in killing his arch nemesis, the hero.
I forget the title, but and you want me to?
No, you mean if you want to, sure.
Yeah.
But you know, right away is like, oh crap, I've really done something bad here. This dude did a lot for the, you know, just twisting the reader's expectations, I guess. And I guess that your visual metaphors is what really kind of got my attention. I mean, you know, that's what got my interest, and that's what made me keep on reading. So bravo to you guys. I mean, you did a great job. I can see why you'd be getting a lot of comments on this.
Thanks. Yeah, that means that we did our job.
Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned, I'm sorry,
Edison Rex.
It. Thank you. Strongly recommend checking that out. Awesome. To anyone who hasn't as well. But you had mentioned webtoons.com as being the home for Metaphorical Horror. Is there anywhere else that people can check it out or should be directed?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, right. No. So Webtoon has an app that's free and easy to find us and other comics on. But that's pretty much all the only place that we're at right now.
Yeah, okay. Webtoon publishes Metaphorical Horror. So
that's
where you go.
And those are the links then we'll be putting on social media to help send people over that way to check it out. And I can't tell our listeners enough, check this out. The visual of the career suicide is well worth, you know, going and looking into it. It's amazing. It's
a heart-wrenching scene, and pull his heart out, give it to her, and then she throws it downstairs. Yeah.
The career suicide, I would love to have in a frame on the wall. Yes. That would be amazing.
Yeah, we were talking about doing that as a print.
You should. You've already got one sold.
You got at least three.
David, I hope you don't mind if I ask James really quick, and I hope you don't mind. And if you do, I'll just simply cut it out. I was trolling around on you guys a little bit yesterday and found that you're the bass player in a band called, I believe, is it Kyatt?
It's Quiet. It's like a, it's Quiet Without You.
Quiet Without, but it's still pronounced Quiet. Got you. And I got to hear the song Mannequin, and I just got to say it, I was a fan, a big fan. Really good music. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's our latest single that we just put out a couple months ago. Being in a band has really kind of informed Metaphorical Her, because there's a lot of music influence. Right. She gets up on stage and, you know, and performs, and that's how she basically like beats the old guard of the poetry world. She gets up and performs in front of, you know, drunken dive bar goers instead of the traditional like gallery patron.
Sure.
So I've been using a lot of my experiences and stories of being on the road with Quiet to kind of add a level of authenticity to that whole scene.
Sure.
It's been good.
Well, I'm liking what I'm hearing, and if you're up for it, I can put that song at the end of the episode.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, and let people check it out, because it's a lot of fun. So, again, check out Metaphorical Her on webtoons.com. We'll be putting those links up in our social media. James, David, I want to thank you both again for being here with us today.
Hey, thank you.
Jack, what do we have on the website?
Go to candairpodcast.com, where you can check out all our guests, listen to the show, follow us on all our social medias, check out our YouTube pages, become a patron, buy some merch, and if you'd like to be a guest and promote your work, send us an email on our contacts page.
And don't forget, on Twitter and Facebook, we are at CandairPod, and on Instagram, we are at Cand_Air.
And What If? Go to whatifpod.com or look us up on iTunes. Jack, what's the best way of finding us on iTunes? Because there's other What If
series, it'll pop up.
Search What If series on iTunes.
Yep. With a series that asks, What If?
There it is. Yeah. There it is. And we have the yellow text with the red banner over a blue space kind of background. Mm-hmm. So there's some other What If shows out there.
Quite a few.
Yeah. We something we didn't think about when we designed that show. Not many comic podcasts called Canned Air out there.
There's also a movie called What If, too, I guess.
Son of a bitch.
But IMDb.
Seen a number of books pop up.
Fuck! This is just going to keep getting harder, isn't it? Oh, well. That'll make it more interesting, the challenge, I suppose. All right. Well, with all of that behind us, until next time, I'm Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Jake Runyon.
And I'm James Maddox.
And I'm David Stoll.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We got through it!
Perfect.
Just a boy born and grown in the shadow of a
on fire. I need to get help.
Do it from outside.
Blowtorch.
Whenever there's a fire in your house, be sure to get outside immediately. And once outside, get on cannedairpodcast.com.
Well, thanks for the tip, Blowtorch, but just one question. What about the fire?
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
One, two, one, two, three, testing. Talk, gentlemen.
Testing. I don't know if I can do a Urkel stare, Jake.
Yeah, he's giving me the eyes.
You like my Urkel there?
He's, he's concerned, but, a little aroused.
And, he's standing too close to an open fire because they're melting on his face on one side. But
these things happen.
And he's from
Leo. Keep people safe. What's this?
I don't know. It's weird. Oh, it did it again.
Science! 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 Hello, podcast fans. Want to get weird with us? Come check out the Mad Scientist Podcast. We are a weekly show that looks at the history, philosophy, and hard facts behind your biggest paranormal questions.
Did the government really pay for a psychic spy program?
Yes!
Is it true that surgery got its start in grave robbing?
Yes!
Can a roller coaster really kill you?
Legally, we can't say so for sure, but sometimes, yes! Join myself, Chris Cogswell, and my co-host, Marie Mayhew, as we examine the science, philosophy, and history behind the strange and unusual. All to discover what's possible and plausible versus what's, well, just made up. Check us out wherever you find your favorite podcasts. The Mad Scientist Podcast.